Nurses and Hypochondriacs, the podcast that brings nurse experts, patients, and hypochondriacs together to discuss hot topics in healthcare. And here is your host, Ercilia Pompilio.
It's our number 100th podcast episode here at Nurses and Hypochondriacs. I'm super excited to finally climb this mountain. It has definitely been a journey, and I am so thankful to all the listeners out there who have tuned in and who have left ratings on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I mean, without you, there would be no podcast. And thank you so much to all the guests who have come on throughout the years. And of course, a special thank you to my podcast soulmate, Jonathan Colum. He keeps the show sounding amazing. And now for our number 100th episode, Evocative Poetry Part 3, I bring on my very first guest, T. Wynn. That's right, T was my starter guest. I love her so much. We recorded way back in 2017 at a podcast studio that no longer exists. And today she comes back on to talk about that episode. That episode was called Tuberculosis, the Consumption That Puccini Made Famous. And I waited 6 months to go ahead and record that episode and launch it. So T comes on today and we're going to be talking about what's happened to her since that first episode, because again, she suffered some PTSD going through the COVID lockdowns, because once again, she was locked down just like she was back in 2017 when she got tuberculosis. She's also going to share some of her poems, and she even has one that she wrote about tuberculosis. So this is a super fun episode that you won't want to miss. This episode was brought to you by Rogue Nurse Media and The Well-Written Nurse, empowering nurses and patients to tell their stories. Welcome to Nurses and Hypochondriacs, our first ever podcast guest, T. Wynn.
Yay.
How are you?
Hi, it's been a while.
I know. I am so happy that you were my number one, and now you're my number 100, which Yay. I'm glad that's worked out. So
yeah.
Welcome to the show. It's been a while.
I know. I'm glad it's worked out for you too. It's like, wow, we're already at 100.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a slow trudge. I mean, usually people do one a week, so we should have been at 100 a long time ago, but it's,
just blame it on COVID.
Yeah. Blame it on COVID, blame it on finances, work, you know, me doing 50 million things at one time, which is, that's what we're put on the planet to do anyway, is to get self-realized and, keep leveling up. So I've been leveling up as you have too, which I think is super awesome. About what's going on. Yeah. I mean, when we recorded the first time, you came up to me and you told me your tuberculosis story.
Yeah.
And we were at a storytelling show. I think Oscar was hosting that show at that time, right?
Yes.
Oscar Sagastumi, who has also been on Nurses and Hypochondriacs as well.
Yeah, he's the hypochondriac.
right. I should have Oscar on again. Oh my gosh. So, yeah, I used to see him in passing a lot at the storytelling shows, but you told me your story. We went ahead and recorded it in an actual podcast studio the first time that is no longer there. So it was it was a comic shop, and then it was this podcast studio, and it was really weird and bizarre. Huh? It was legit. Yeah.
Yeah, but then they were studio?
Very, yeah. Then they were very disorganized, you know, and, but we had a lot of fun.
We did. It was super chill.
And
was really fun.
Yeah. The girl recording it was like, I learned so much.
I learned so much.
Yeah. I learned so much. So what's been going on with you, T? I mean, On our last on our first episode, you got thrown into the county hospital because you had tuberculosis. You were misdiagnosed for many, many months because they kept diagnosing you with sinusitis, right?
Postnasal drip, which is that the official name for that?
Yeah, now it's called COVID.
Okay. I know. Everything is COVID now. I can't tell. Allergies. I can't breathe. COVID. But it's not. So I have no idea. Good. I'm actually really good. It's interesting that you bring up COVID just because, like, in the midst of like tuberculosis, where I was the only one in quarantine. So then when COVID hit, everybody was like, oh my God, is T having like PTSD? Like, is she okay? And I was like, no, this is excellent. Like, cause it wasn't just me. It was the whole world. Like, we get to be shut down together. Nothing's happening. Oh my God. I don't feel left out. I didn't get FOMO or anything like that. So that was so much fun. But I love that my friends were super concerned for me. And there were some PTSD moments because I was like, gosh, this sounds really familiar. You know, like, I think the familiarity was like when I was in the hospital for tuberculosis, I kept wanting to know when I'm going to get out. And doctors were like, we don't know. It just depends on your test results. And here it's like, when are we going to get, when is quarantine going to be lifted? When are face masks going to be lifted? Everyone is just figuring it out as we go. So it's been fascinating. And then like, when I had TB, I had very like temporary jobs, like part-time jobs, like a substitute teacher and a waitress. So, or server. And then, so fast forward to like COVID times, I didn't have a temporary job. I had a permanent job. I was working at a school as an executive assistant to the director. And thank God, I'm so grateful for that school and for that like big girl job, because if I had those temporary jobs in COVID times, I would have made no money and had to move back home. So I had a consistent job. We did online remote learning. And, you know, sometimes if like the teacher was sick with COVID and had to like shut off their computer, I came in and subbed via Google Meets. So.
Oh my God. Fun. That's awesome. Like, I totally thought of you during COVID. I was like, what is T going through? It's like she'd already gone through it before. I mean, it's like you were a time traveler.
Yeah, you know, well, in a way. TB like was like, you know, training grounds. I was like, oh, this is super chill. But I mean, but COVID was like scary. Just because like, I don't know, like you go through different stages of like processing, I guess, because like when it first came out and with the Delta variant, like everyone was shut down, stay in your homes and, you know, just hang out, right, and work from home. So I love working from home, no traffic, and you
roll up
and it's like, hey kids, what's up? But then like it's scary when like your parents get it. So my parents, they're a lot older. My dad is like in his 70s, my mom is like 65. And they were a little cavalier, I should say. Like, they wanted to go see their friends, and their friends were in the OC, and the OC kind of had some lax rules from the beginning. So they went down to the OC. I was actually, I think I actually went to Mexico.
I went to Mexico too.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. May 2020. It was awesome. It was there.
It was so fun. Like, I mean, I went to like Guadalajara, I went to Puerto Vallarta. Oh, it was in awesome. And we chose those cities because they had like their COVID rules up to speed, right? Guadalajara, like every time before we stepped into a new area, they would like hand sanitize us and like check our temperature. So
they did that in Ensenada too.
Yeah. It was really like well done.
Yeah. Right? And so, everybody was really nice about it. When we went to Mexico, everybody was very welcoming and very nice. Like, they wanted us to be there. So, it was cool. But here in the States, it was like, people were very aggressive and weird.
Well, here it's like, if you're not wearing a face mask, like, shame on you. And then if you are wearing a face mask, shame on you. So it just really depend on where you were.
Right.
so many people are just like fighting against like the requirements and or the mandates, and it's like, stop telling me what to do, just make it optional, blah blah blah. So so whatever, like my parents went down, they got COVID, they went back home into San Jose in the Bay Area, got my sister sick because like all my whole family, whole immediate family lives together, right? And my sisters are in their third, like 20s, 30s. So yeah, they were fine. Nothing happened. My mom, nothing happened. Like they had like really mild symptoms, but my dad, he couldn't breathe.
Wow.
Yeah. He's like such a stubborn Asian man where it's like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. And he kept just like putting it off. And my mom was just like, you have to go to the hospital. And at that time, I don't think they had rapid tests yet. Mm-hmm. So they're like, but our appointment's not until like 2 days later. We'll just wait until then. And I was like, but you need to get tested. Like, just go if you can't breathe. Like, he's like, I already quarantined myself to the other part of the house. And I was like, dude, just go. And he went, and he definitely had COVID. And he was hospitalized. He was, he was on a breathing machine.
Ventilator. Wow. Now,
they even like after, I think 6 or 7 days, like I would call him every day and he was like, yep, I got a new roommate. Somebody got better, you know, like faster than me. got another roommate. So cause I don't know, as an old man, he's very healthy. He's very healthy. Like he walks and he like works out, he does like yard work, like he considers himself like a very healthy man, but dang, like he got COVID. They sent him home, they like, you know, helped him and whatever, and I think my dad was like, I was like, what are you taking? And he was like, a bunch of like a cocktail of meds, like I think they're just trying to figure it out. They really were, like it was like it's something different time. And like he eventually got better. They sent him home with like tanks of air,
oxygen,
oxygen, and like my sisters were describing how he would like they gave him a really long tube so that he could like be attached to the machine and then walk around the house. But then because with COVID you lose a lot of weight, and then like, you know, he I guess wanted to be too like quick with like getting back to normal, so then he had a gallbladder stones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just crazy. And like, he couldn't get rid of the gallbladder stones because he had just gotten COVID and they weren't sure of like the mixture of meds with him. So they couldn't give him surgery until like 3 months later. So then they attached a catheter to his back where he would have to drain.
No.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
That's the grossest.
Yeah.
My mom would tell me that like she would have to clean him and like, you know, empty out the sack. But he's fine now. And he's like, that's we all great. Just went to Disney World together and walked theme parks. Yeah. And then, oh gosh, I got COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. I got COVID twice.
Oh my God. How was it for you? Yeah.
The first time I think it was worse. I had a lot of fatigue and that was in December of 2020. The second time was just in January of 2022. So I got sick. Both of my parents got sick and they live with my brother. He didn't get sick at all, which was bizarre.
Yeah.
But my dad actually, he's 87. He did really well. So he was only sick for 3 days.
That's so good.
And, yeah. See, it's and so I different. Think it's because there's so many theories on what COVID is. Mm-hmm. And my dad does a lot of detox stuff. So he eats papaya every day. So there's a theory that it could be parasitic. So you have to get your microbiome kind of balanced. And so he does everything I tell him to, plus he eats papaya, which is a natural anti-parasitic. So I think that's what helped him. And then he did my regimen and he got well in 3 days. My mother, on the other hand, doesn't listen. She's very, very stubborn. And she's a very active person. She's 78 now, but super active. Still, you know, still works because she loves to work. She has her own business and stuff.
But yeah, she was a little bit more difficult, but she's always the like dramatic sick person.
Yeah.
So she's really, really difficult, but they're both better now.
That's good. Yeah. What's your regimen?
What do you mean? My dad's regimen? Oh, it was Mucinex. Yeah. So Mucinex works. I actually watched it off of some pharmacist on TikTok. And so it was Mucinex. I made them this tea that had a lot of citrus in it, and it had a lot of just natural antibiotic properties. So my dad would drink the tea every day, you know, and my mom wouldn't drink it. Mm-hmm. And she would drink it every once in a while, but my dad religiously drank 2 cups of this tea every day. And he did the Mucinex. He said that made him stop coughing right away. He felt really good. And yeah, he just drank lots of water, and I forget what else happened.
I don't know.
He was eating his papaya. But so.
I honestly never got COVID until I went to Spain. So Delta had already happened. And then I went, let's see, it was like the summer where everything was lifted. So like summer of last year, like everything is lifted. And then like maybe around November, there's like, oh no, a new variant, Omicron. And I'm like, whatever, I haven't gotten in, I'm fine. Right. And my boyfriend and I, we went to Spain, and to enter each country has different requirements. Spain doesn't require for you to get a COVID test. You just have to show that you're vaccinated or answer these questions and have a QR code. And then you just get a QR code. So super cool, right? Super quick. I think we wanted to go to France too, but France, you had to get there.
They were really strict.
Really strict. They had to, you have to go there, find a pharmacy, show them you're vaccinated and get like qualified under their standards, and they have to give you a certain like certificate so that you can use that to enter all these different things. But Spain was actually pretty lax. So I go there, I have some, like I used to study abroad, and so I still keep in touch with that family that I studied abroad with.
I remember, you were talking about that.
So like they picked me up, from the airport, we had dinner together, like me and my boyfriend had a hotel, but I wanted to meet them, give them presents. And within that like maybe like 3 hour, like hi fest, like my Spanish mom had a little cold. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's fine, whatever. And then like 4 days later, I have a little cold. And then I was in Barcelona and I was going to come back to their house and stay for the rest of my time there during New Year's Day. But then they call me on Christmas Day while I'm in Barcelona. They're like, hey, the whole family is sick.
That's COVID. Uh-oh. Well,
they didn't test yet. They were like, like my mom and my dad are sick. The kids are fine. Kids had already had a version of COVID before or a little earlier. So they had antibodies. So the mom and dad were sick, and they wanted to let me know before I come that like they're already sick. Maybe I wouldn't want to come, but I was like, I'm already sick. Let's have a whole like party together and be sick together.
Right. So,
and then in Barcelona, in Spain, they were like selling like rapid tests in the pharmacy. So it was like for €5, €4. We bought a bunch. We tested ourselves and we were positive. Wow. But that was problematic because I was supposed to get home within 5 days of that. And I think at that time, CDC's rules were like, you have to be quarantined for 10. I think Spain, you have to be quarantined for 12. But then like 2 days before we were to leave, CDC changed it to 5. Spain changed it to 7. But it didn't matter because to enter America, you had to provide an antigen, at least an antigen or PCR test with your name, your passport number, and with and it has to be at most the day before. So, okay, we're in a foreign country. Where do we get such a test?
Right.
How do we get it in time? And am I still positive? And my boyfriend, 5 days ago, my boyfriend and I, we tested, I was positive, he was negative. Okay, but he's around me 24 hours. Right. So
eventually he's probably going to get positive.
So we found a place fortunately, like I live with a Spanish family. So like, they're like, yeah, urgent care does it. So you just go to urgent care and you have to pay out of pocket. It was like 30 euros for an antigen test, but we got our results within 2 hours and I was positive. And so was my boyfriend, and we could not get on a plane. We had to keep rescheduling, and we didn't know when we would turn negative.
Oh, wow.
So we had to like, just like, okay, let's just like plan, let's just plan another flight a week out. But we did like a budget flight. And a week out, we were still positive. Actually, I was negative, but my boyfriend was positive. So we lost money on that. Then we like did maybe like 3 days or 4 days later. Cause then by that time he was like rapid testing every day to like at least know. And
right.
Yeah. And like, we had to get back because school was starting. Like we were getting off of winter break.
Oh, wow.
But before winter break, like I go to a private school. So we are really strict on like the testing before or coming back from a long break. We have to get COVID tested before we can even get onto campus. So the whole school went and got COVID tested that we provide. Like we hire somebody, we hire nurses, and they come to our school to like conduct the COVID PCR test for every student, employee, and faculty. And the numbers were pretty high. So we didn't have school for another like week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ended up not getting home. I was supposed to stay in Spain for three weeks or like 2.5 weeks, but me and my boyfriend ended up staying there for a good month before we could get home.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. 12 extra days.
Wow. Fun, but crazy.
It was honestly like, it was actually a really good time. I got to like, I try to see that my Spanish family like every 2 years and because of COVID I couldn't. Yeah. So this was just making up time for the past like 4 years. I hadn't seen them in 4 years and it was great. Like got to celebrate, Tres Magos.
Oh,
it's their version of Christmas.
It's the Three Kings. Yeah.
Yeah. They were super cute. It's fascinating to me just because like they celebrate that on January 6th. And I was like, ooh, our January 6th is the insurrection. their January 6th is like, hey, let's set the table and wait for, you know, the Three Kings to give us presents. A very sweet and beautiful time in Spain, but here it's like, and Spain, I'll have to tell you this, like Spain, their COVID requirements were so lax. And like my Spanish family, they weren't vaccinated, but they were like, look, like we got COVID before, we were fine. We got COVID again. Yeah. We're fine. Like, you know, what is the big deal? They just didn't like how like families would be broken and like all these, like,
yeah, it was a little bit, the way they did it was a little bit crazy. It's like they wanted like humanity's demise, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. But, you know, nobody knew what they were doing. But the thing of it is, it hit Italy first, you know, and I had my cousin on here explaining it. And actually, he got hospitalized later. Yeah, he's a smoker. So, and my whole thing was, why couldn't the American doctors speak to the Italian doctors? Some of them were, but there was a lot of erroneous stuff going on. And now there's a lot of litigious stuff going on because of the errors that happened and the people that unfortunately died.
Yeah.
Because of either they just weren't being treated the way they should have. Maybe some people didn't need to be hospitalized and they were. There were a lot of hospitals making money off of using ventilators and maybe they shouldn't. There's a lot of doctors speaking out about this right now, a lot of politicians speaking out about this, just the way it was handled. I mean, we saw the mayor of or the governor of New York step down because he's not a doctor. He's not a nurse. People who really do patient care, like here in California or in Los Angeles, actually, the woman that is the how I forget her title, the public health person or the person in charge. She's never done patient care. She's just a researcher. Why don't you have a nurse in that position? That woman makes over $600,000 a year. She looks like death. I mean, she's very skinny, frail, white looking. She looks like a dead person. What's wrong there? You know, and now our streets are littered with feces. There's typhoid going on out there. There's rats everywhere. And nobody cares about that. You know, there's tons of homeless people that are probably.
There's a rise in TB.
Yeah, there's a rise in TB. Exactly. Yeah. And where's this public health woman? You know, is she doing anything about it? No. You know, it's like if you look back in history, nurses were the ones really taking care of public health issues. And there's a lot of crazy stuff going out in the nursing world. But that is for another time, another episode that I will be doing. But so glad to have you. But you've been doing so much in your lifetime. Like the last time we talked, you were a storyteller, you were pursuing acting.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I think at that time I was I joined like a theater company in LA and like 2017, 2018, like we did like a play. And then from there, like it was a small company. So it was easy to like, you know, move up or like do different roles. And so I went and did like more writing and had like a little incubation writing. Cause some of the people in there like work for HBO or so they would like give us tips and feedback. It's like, oh, let's just like do like a mini writing session. So it was a really good way to like hone skills. And during COVID we actually did like a woman's showcase. So it was really fun. We wrote little shorts and performed little shorts for Zoom, and I like wrote two pieces that got in. And I acted in one of them. So I thought it was really cool. Cause it was just like, you know, that it's going to be through Zoom. So you know that like it has to, you want to be creative and not write like a play about a meeting. Cause that's like what you
exactly. That's what everybody's doing. Right.
Yeah. So I wrote a play, like a little story based on, I was like really into documentaries when I was during quarantine. So I had watched The Vow on HBO.
Oh, what's that about?
It was about this like cult called Nexium where the sex cult. Yeah. So I was just like, cause it was just, it was fascinating because like you're watching it and it's like these people that join are really smart. They're really caring people. So like the predator really just capitalized on their like insecurities. And it's like, cause like you always like hear about these cults and it's like, gosh, like how did these women, you know, they're smart. How did they get folded into this? And you watch it and it's like, oh, yeah, I get it. Like, you know, because.
So
like,
how did they do what? What is the, cause I.
It's grooming.
Yeah. I mean, I was very obsessed with cults. And now I'm obsessed with these cult type shows. Like the one I watched was Bad Vegan, which is really great. And God, she was kind of like that. It was kind of like that too, where, but at the end of Bad Vegan, the vegan's dad says, because I was like, this woman, she studied economics. She worked in banking and finance and stuff. Yeah. It's like, how is it that she can't manage her restaurant?
She went to Ivy League.
Yeah. She only owed $2 million. So you have to think. And what her father says was genius, because her father was a very smart man as well. Like he was an engineer. And he goes, oh yeah, like she was using this guy too. She actually believed that he was a millionaire and he would take on her debt. So she's like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, so they were literally using and kind of conning each other.
Right.
In a way.
I know. By the end of that, I didn't feel sorry for her.
I didn't. By the end of it, I didn't feel sorry for her, because I'm like, I know she has her money like in the Cayman Islands or in a Swiss bank somewhere. She had to. She was conning everybody, because I was like, you only owe $2 million.
Yeah.
And you're running this high-end restaurant and everybody loves you. Everybody loves a narcissist. Have you ever seen it? It's like all these people, they love these people. And yeah. I'm always the one that like, oh, this guy is like full of shit. Like they have nothing going on, but people love to be conned. Oh yes. Oh, look at it. Aren't they great? And I've been to so many things where, and then at the end, you're like, aha, see, yeah. And people are like, how did you know? Number one, I'm really intuitive. Number two, I love studying these con people, you know, because yeah. they're fascinating. They're so sociopathic. It's like
there's been just a slew of like grifters, right? Yes. Like Fire Island and even like Elizabeth. What's her name?
Oh, Elizabeth Holmes. Yeah, we did a parody with her. Terrible. Yeah, that was very funny.
Yeah.
The Tinder swindler, another yeah. one.
So know. Many. And like, I mean, for me, I was like, look, I don't have enough money for you to swindle.
Yeah, me too. So I'm like, I am not giving you any money. Like yeah. you could swindle me any other way, but that's my thing. I was like, I don't got it and I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah. So that's why it's more like, you know, I'm not going to get swindled. I'm gullible. I'll tell you that. Like I'm super gullible and I would definitely. And I think my mom was super gullible. Like there were a time when like you would get like emails, like that was like from a random email address, but they would like posit as someone, you know, saying like, oh, hey, I need money. I'm in like Nigeria, blah, blah. Like just need, can you send this out money? So my mom got one of those from our cousin named Michelle. Michelle has like a very common name. Mm. So my mom calls me up. She's like, oh my God, we have to give Michelle money. She is ransom. She is kidnapped. This is like, no, mom, it's a scam. Relax. So I get my gullibility from her. But that's also like, that's how I also, I think is like, I'm a good actor. I'm like, yeah. I really trick my mind to believe what the other actor is saying.
Right.
But so
But talk about your play then, that you did, like, what was it?
I mean, like, so that one was, the one about on the vow. And like, I just wrote it and then gave it away to like somebody in the company and she directed it, Sarah, the creative director, and she directed it. She did so good. And like, I wrote it in a way where it's like, you know, let's see what we can do with this. Let's see if we can actually put it in Zoom. And she was really creative because one of the scenes is like, you know, a man and a woman, like the man is the predator and he's trying to get the woman to like join his cult. But, you know, but really it was more like he's just like giving her so many compliments. They're in a car, they're in a drive-thru to In-N-Out. And it's like, oh, you want to go to In-N-Out with me? I'm really hungry. Let's go. So the director, she put like two, if you see in a Zoom, like, you know, you see the two boxes together. Mm-hmm. And they had set up like the background to match, where it's like, this is the background for like one side of the car and then the other box. Cool. It's on the other side. And uh-huh. then in my thing, because I was like, okay, they're in a car, In-N-Out lines are really long.
Yeah.
You know, then the predator is going to push it forward and be like, oh, see, you're so good. You're so beautiful. You know, you want to give me a blowjob?
And she's bombing. Like, yeah.
So she gives him a blowjob.
Oh my
right?
gosh.
And so again, like to do with Zoom, like the actors have to like, kind of do it in a time like everything is on time, right? So like she right. puts her head down on her screen and then he like grows it. So I thought that was really fun.
That's really creative. That's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the theater company is Flat Tire Theater Company. So you can always just check out. I think we're actually participating in Fringe. So that's really fun.
Oh, neat. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Fringe. I think my other piece, it was inspired by like during the whole quarantine, a bunch of us like started calling each other, like in uh-huh. like high school friends, college friends. Uh-huh. It's like, hey, what's up? Like, we got nothing to do. Let's just like have a big Zoom call, like, you yeah. know, high school
what
reunion.
Everybody was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was really fun. And one of my high school friends, you know, we like call him up and he's like, he's on his phone and he was like, hey, I got to get ready for a date. So it was like all of us, it was like 18 of us all from high school. And we're like, you know, trying to pick out his like outfit for him, trying to like, oh, so wait, where's his date? Uh-huh. We can't go anywhere. He's like, oh, it's right. at my house. Like, oh, then you gotta clean up, you know, right. what's for dinner. So it was, and he would just like take his phone and like just like follow.
How fun. We would
follow him around his house to make sure everything was clean. He's like, look, I got flowers for her. Look, I got.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a winner. Look at that.
It didn't work. I mean, once the woman came, then like, you know, he shut off and we didn't get to be on the date, but It was just like, that was a fun meeting, right? It's not just like, hey, what's going on? But he was like walking and showing. And so I did something like that where high school friends were calling up each other. And, you know, I think quarantine brought out a lot of like insecurities, or people were like, I'm lonely. Let me check up on this person. So that was more of an examination of like what could have been between these two people that were best friends in high school, or actually polar opposites. One was like super popular, one was a nerd. And the popular, and then like fast forward like 20 years later, and
it's
the
reverse. Yeah,
it's the reverse. And like she's like calling him up, like, hey, how are you? You want to come over? And he's like, no, I got a date. Look, you know. So that was
it.
A fun way.
That's
yeah. But I think like with that, I think with it really reminded me that like I don't really want to be an actor anymore. Uh-huh. I mean, it's fine, but it was just like. It's a struggle, right? And like I being an actor, sometimes you're subjected to somebody else's story.
Yeah.
Right? And I want to write my own. I want to take that into control. And I think with the encouragement from like my theater company and how they're like, no, you have really good stories. Like,
yeah,
we like it. So, and I think it just works within like, it's a natural progression, even from like storytelling with Oscar. Yeah. And so then I like before COVID, I had taken classes on poetry and I had taken classes on screenwriting. And with screenwriting, it's still the entertainment industry, but it's so hard to like get in. And I just don't know what I like, how I can be better, or it's just a very subjective like industry. So then I actually went and applied for an MFA in poetry.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think like even during the quarantine, it was just like, look, like you can get a degree online and there's no like bad reputation about it. Cause I always thought like, oh, online, like,
right.
You know, shouldn't you like be in person? But the whole COVID thing really made it like, oh no, this is actually works a lot better. You don't have to like, you can be in any school, but be online. And like, so I found University of New Orleans, applied, and then I got in. And so now I've been Yeah, it's great because like it's a lot of asynchronous classes, which works because then I can like continue like my daily life, have a job that can actually pay for the degree. And then
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I have like night school or school whenever I can, you know, fit it in.
That's excellent. I love that. That's perfect. And so why did you pick poetry?
I was reading a lot, and some of the poems, some of the poets that I've been reading were just so inspiring. I mean, I don't know if you heard like of Ocean Vuong.
No.
Ocean Vuong is like a mega star in like the poetry. Like he just released a book. He is like, I think he won a MacArthur grant or, you know, an award for like geniuses. And he's actually a Vietnamese immigrant. He was born in Vietnam, came over when he was two in like the East Coast, and he's amazing. So like I read his book, and like I think his like what is it, his first book of poems that he released, and this was like maybe in 2016 2017, and it was so good. I love how poetry is just very efficient, right? That's like, you can describe a feeling in so little words and have the viewer feel
deep.
So deep.
It's deep. Yeah. I mean, I felt like that with, so I had my friend Stephen Rains, who once was the West Hollywood Poet Laureate. On the show, and he wrote the book. He was the first ever West Hollywood Poet Laureate, and he wrote a book called A Quilt for David, which is done in poetry and prose, and it is a book about a dentist who was diagnosed with AIDS, and then his patients came down with AIDS, a few of his patients did, and they accused him of transmitting AIDS to them. Stephen wrote this beautiful, beautiful book. It took him a little over 6 years to do the research. He actually went and spoke to several of his lovers. He went to this man's, his name is David. He went to several of his, like, wherever he would hang out. You know, he spoke to his family, he spoke to his hospice nurse. I mean, he did a lot of research, and he wrote this, but it is deep. It's like, I couldn't even finish reading all of it. Like, today I was like, oh, I really need to finish reading Stephen's book, because it takes you there. You're there, you know? And I feel that this book is very channeled. Like, he is speaking for this dentist, you know, he's vindicating him somehow of what he was accused of. And Stephen believes he was falsely accused, you know, because they were calling him a serial killer. And Stephen was like, he was not a serial killer.
No,
you know, but it is very beautifully written. I have an extra copy. I will send it to you for being on here, which you'll love.
Oh, and thank you.
Yeah. Since it's April is National Poetry Month, correct? Yep. They have Stephen's picture. Like, I just drove by West Hollywood last night on, what is it, Sunset and Highland, I think it is.
Okay.
Where, you know, there's like the Target over there, kind of next to the Formosa. Mm-hmm. So there's a big screen over there, and they have his picture up with
wow.
Yeah. So they do it every year. He was on there last year too, but he made it up again, which is really great.
A poet I follow, she made it up there too. Her name is Jessica Salgado.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Excellent. She's good too. I think, yeah, I love that. Like, you read poetry and it's like, it's deep, but it's also, you read things that you could never, I could not really relate to that. Right. But yet you can still feel that powerful emotion.
Oh, you can still feel powerful. I mean, you just, like, when I'm there, when I'm reading his book, I feel like all of a sudden consciously I'm transformed. Like, I could see things, you know, in almost a three-dimensional way. You know, I'm in a different dimension when I'm reading it. It just takes me to another place. It's just so awesome. Yeah. And it's interesting that poetry has the power to do that, you know, and it has such a great healing power. So I'd love for you to read some of your poetry, but before that, like, what are you planning to do with your poetry? Like, anything, are you planning to bring it into schools, you know, and kind of teach that there?
I mean, I've thought about that, but I also, like, I really want to, like, I mean, it is a good processing tool in terms of, well, I definitely want to publish a book of poems. And, like, for me, I've been using it to process, like, generational trauma. And
love,
like,
it.
Yeah. It's just like understanding, like, my parents and what they went through and what they carried and then brought it onto us. Right. And so, and I think with poetry, it lends itself, because it's such a sensory medium. Like, you can hear, you can smell, you can taste and touch within, like, that efficient amount of words. And it's just, like, so deep and powerful. So I do want to make, like, a little chapbook that really examines that. I mean, I even wrote a script that is, like, based on, like, my mom and, like, all her wishes and her desires. And it's, like, being, like, inherited from her three kids and how that insecurity or how that, like, expectations are manifested with three different people. And that's right. So, you know, I'm writing what I know, but I do want to write it. Yeah, I think, and I actually, my name means poem, so.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, so my parents actually are fortune tellers.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I it's just, like, I love efficiency. I love, like, powerful emotion. I think it really is a good crossover with acting as well. Even with screenplays, they're just very short, just the dialogue.
Right. And there is a bit of poetry there, because, again, just like the poetry books, with screenwriting, you have to have the ability to transport that person in that scene, you know, so they're also experiencing it with you at that same time, you know. I'm writing a screenplay right now. I've been writing it for over a year now, and I'll get pieces of it. I mean, I wrote a Save the Cat of it, and I'll sit down with with John, my podcast editor. He actually just launched his movie. It was at South by Southwest, and he won several awards. Yeah. I'm so proud of him. And so he'll sit down with me and he'll go through my story with me, which is great. And it's also very healing because there is a lot of very weird traumas that were coming up. And I was just like, what is this, you know? And to be able to put it in like a surreal platform has been very healing.
Yeah. You know? I love metaphors. I think poetry can do wonders with just like a line of metaphor. And it's just like, oh man, like I completely understand it. I don't understand the metaphor, but I understand that feeling that they're referring to. And it's like, oh wow. Like, and just like the fascination of like how the author created that metaphor and their thinking behind it. And it's just, I think is so fascinating and really intelligent. I don't know. Yeah.
Because it evokes that emotion, you know, it's almost like they're either a magician or, you know, just kind of making you shift into that consciousness. It's awesome.
But in an instant, it's so crazy.
Yeah. So go ahead and share some poems. You said you had a couple, which is awesome. I would love to listen.
So because it's interesting, like I'm in my MFA right now, and like I'm learning different techniques and ways to look at poetry. And so when I look back at my old poems, I'm like, oh, this is garbage, like push it away. And I was listening to a podcast of Ocean Vuong, like an interview, and he was saying how like when you look back at your old poems and you don't like it, that means you're better. That's a good thing to celebrate. So I'm gonna read you a poem that I wrote. And again, this is still workshopping. It's never,
of course,
it's never done. But this poem, let's see. One of the poems I wrote is like about tuberculosis. So this one's called 9 months of tuberculosis. I sit by the window like a cliche from a movie. My fingers reach across the pane. Not a joke. I just want to go outside. My eyes beg a passerby 5 stories below to walk toward me. I wave excitedly. I start to cough. Too excited. My lungs are fire. Cut off the oxygen, make it stop. I'm at a bar throwing water over it. People are staring. Suppress the coughs, damn it. I'm sweating. I'm underwater, waving my arms rhythmically. My head tilts to catch breath, but a stone in my chest sinks me. I'm clawing at my throat, but all I touch is glass. There's an IV in my outstretched arm. The passerby is gone, just as well. My sickly reflection says I'm no fun, but my nurse is. She brings me a cocktail every day.
I love it. I love that. I love how you wrote your lungs were on fire.
You know? Oh my God.
That's amazing. And how you were feeling like you were underwater. That's huge. But I love how you made it into a screenplay like you were talking about, because I could totally see that, you know, it's like a mini movie, which is really beautiful.
I mean, like,
I also love it how you ended it with the nurse.
Of course. The nurses were like the best part of like my time in the hospital. They were the ones that like checked in on me and got to know me and talk to me. Like, you know, they made me feel like a human versus like an exhibit, you know. But I also like take a lot of inspiration from other artists. And my teacher had said like you should check out Yosef Komisaka, and like he like does a poem on the Vietnam Memorial because he was a Vietnam war vet. Love and that. So he plays a lot with like imageries, like flashback, you know, or like not flashback, but like, you know, this image here, this image there, and then boom, 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 and it all connects.
I love that.
So yeah.
Very surreal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I, last night, so there's an interesting thing that happens to me that I've been noticing, and I don't know if it happens to you, when you come together with other creatives that are on your same vibrational level. So one of my friends, Mike, and I went to go have pizza last night, and this always happens when we're together. So he's way far out there. He's a metaphysician, and he does a lot of very creative stuff. Like he plays several different instruments. And so we walked through West Hollywood to go have pizza at this place. So I sat down with him. He starts telling me about this photographer he had just met who is very famous. He charges over $8,000 for his prints. And he, so I look at his stuff on Instagram, and then all of a sudden I go, oh, I got to tell you about these French Canadian artists that I just discovered that were very prominent in the 1960s. And they were called surreal automatists, you know, Les Artistes. I forget what they're called. I don't have my notes with me right now about it. But what they would do is they're somehow they would do this thing to where they astral travel and they come back and they do these portraits. Right. And they and sometimes it was in writing and it was in music. So it was this whole movement, which was very, very interesting. So we start looking up this surreal it's called surreal automatism. And it's just putting different kinds, like you said about that poet, different aspects together that really don't make sense, but then kind of make sense. So you're able to get rid of the ego to judge what's going on out there, and you're seeing it through your more subconscious mind. It's very, very interesting. So, I was like, this is, you know, because I was like, oh, this gives me ideas for other stuff that I'm doing and I'm working on, you know, and it's wild that it happens that way. It's like our brains are attuned to something else. And then all of a sudden we got attacked by a bunch of cockroaches. We're sitting in, which was bizarre. This has never happened to me in Los Angeles or anywhere else. We're sitting there eating pizza and all of a sudden there's all these flying cockroaches that start attacking us. And it was around 9:30 at night. And we were just like,
if anything is to survive an apocalypse, it's cockroaches.
We can't.
Ew.
I was just like, this was so, I was just like, oh, you know. And I guess cockroaches are motion sensitive because then we would try to walk and they would try to follow us. And we would just,
oh, no.
It was a scene. So my friend texts me this morning. He goes, are you going to complain to them? And I'm like, why didn't you complain? We left. You're the one who paid for the meal, you know? Because some people are like, how did you guys do? Are you guys okay? You know, everything went well. We're like, yeah. And then we just leave.
Oh my God.
Don't even tell them about the cockroaches. And he's all like, we need to Yelp it or something.
Just don't ever come back. Oh.
I'll just never go there. It's called Pache in
You just outed them. It's terrible.
On Sunset, really good pizza, but don't sit in the back, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the restaurant looked pretty clean, but it was that back area that there were all these like flying cockroaches. Like, I'm not talking about one or two, there were dozens, you know, which was just really weird and creepy. It's like our little fun pizza night ended up into like a horror movie.
Yeah, oh no, it's
like a scene from a movie or something.
We're
having this great time, we're talking about art, we're getting these downloads, you know, we're figuring stuff out, and all of a sudden we get attacked by cockroaches. So
gross.
But anyway, so do you have one more poem for
us? Let me share with you another one.
I love that one though about the TV. That's so great.
Yeah, actually, that was like a bunch of like old memories. I remember swimming and I was like, I can't breathe. I'm literally going to choke and drown. Or like, I remember like at a bar and like I'm dancing and then it's like, oh my God, like I can't breathe. I need to drink water and I'm coughing so much. Everyone's looking at you because you're in a public space. So
like La Boheme all over again, Puccini's La Boheme.
that was like in like a month before I was to be hospitalized, but I really was like, something is not right. The next one is, so I wrote another poem. I was inspired by my dad because it had been his birthday and like, you know, he's aging and I just like want him to be well. And so this is not a rough draft. Like I sent in my rough draft for my class and then they gave some edits and suggestions. And so this is like an edited version of it. And it goes like this. At 8 or 9, tears sprouted, nourishing my pain. Rain poured with every little slight, drowning any chance of budding maturity. Weeds took over. But then Granddad died one day, and my dad did not water his mourning. Maybe the buzz of a congregation praying, or the way his voice made my ears weep, but sadness flowered. I learned what profound grief meant that day.
It's so beautiful. I love the weeds and how your dad did not get up to water. I love that part.
Yeah. Well, like, cause he's like a strong, stoic Asian man. He's not going to cry even if his dad had just died. Whereas me, at 8 or 9, I was a crybaby. Oh my God. Yeah. He called me a name and you're right. Just like, you know, he didn't say my name right. And I started crying. But at that moment, I remember at church, and I had never even met his dad. His dad was in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I'd be sad if my dad died. So how come my dad isn't crying? But I could tell he was sad, even though he wasn't crying. So I think that was the first moment when I thought about, like, wow, that is where like sadness is profound for me.
Yeah, I think it's really hard for men in general to show their feelings because they're always supposed to be this strong archetype, right? Yeah. And the man does not cry, does not show emotion. That's the feminine side, you know? And to show that side, the feminine side in a man is to show weakness, you know?
Yeah, for sure. He's super traditional.
Right.
You know, Vietnamese man. He was like, you know, was in the Navy during the war, like 100%. So, but he definitely at that time, like he expanded my definition of sadness. That sadness wasn't just tears. You know, it wasn't that open, like sob.
Right.
It could be just like the tone of his voice, the way he like carried himself. I was like, wow, like, I know you're sad. I know it.
Yeah, like body language, mood, you know, in general, you know.
Yeah, but from an 8 and 9, from an 8 or 9 year old, I'm just like, I remember it.
So profound. Yeah. It affected you because you never saw your dad that way. And you're just like, oh, wow. You know, he's showing you this different side. That must have been profound. You know, you're always used to seeing someone a certain way and all of a sudden they show you this new side and it's almost like his child side, you know, is coming out and didn't know how to really express himself.
Of course not. Right. Yeah. But he still had to be strong because he's like my dad, like, you know, he has a kid here looking at him. So it's like, how do you, you know, how do you be a father, but also like take care of yourself and be sad for your own father that just died.
Right.
So I like a lot of my poems are really like generational trauma and like,
I love that. It's so needed right now. It's such a big thing, especially in California, how they have passed this ACEs. I don't know if you know about the ACEs, the where they're looking for trauma that happened in childhood that is related to people's mannerisms now, like addictions and
they're tracing it back to
They're tracing it back. There's lots of research on it, and I've been to a talk on the ACEs many, many years ago with the original guy who started it, who started researching it, and he started doing a diet study for I think Kaiser or something like that, and saw that generational trauma. And trauma experienced in childhood does affect many, many things that people are going through, you know, and it's interesting how our subconscious mind just keeps those in. And then there's various parts of your body too. And unless you release it in a creative way, which I think poetry and writing is an excellent outlet to have that happen, you know,
thanks.
I mean, I think that's excellent. And like, back in the turn of the century, that's what like the guys who created operas like Puccini did, you know, they took whatever was going on, like tuberculosis, and made it into something creative. You know, that's what I did with Nurses and Hypochondriacs. I was dating all these hypochondriacs. and
because you're the nurse
writing about it, you know, and and here we are today.
Yeah.
So that's just how stuff gets created. This has been super fun tea.
Thank you so much for having me.
I can't wait to hear more of your poems, you know.
Of course. Yeah.
I want you to do a show. You should totally do a show. That would be so much fun. You
should. Honestly, the first time I did poetry for a show was for Oscar's show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He was like, hey, do you want to do storytelling? I was like, can I actually do poems? And he was like, yeah, okay. And then I, instead of doing storytelling now, I actually do poems. But I mean, I'm in the midst of it. I want to write it out and like make it, it's never going to be perfect, but I do want to make it as perfect as possible before, you know, it's out in the world. And yeah. I do want to like, you know, publish, I think.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Yeah.
You definitely can. I definitely see you doing that. So
yeah, so awesome. I'm excited for that.
Awesome. Well, I am so happy for your evolution. I think it's been amazing. Yeah. And stuff. And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Till next time.
Thanks for listening to Nurses and Hypochondriacs, episode number 100. We couldn't have done it without you. We'd also love it if you would give us a donation. Go to the end of the show notes, click on the links to PayPal or Venmo, and leave us some bucks. Any amount helps. The funds go back into podcast production, giving nurses and patients a voice. Till next time.